Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Daniel Davis Deep Dive Roadshow Edition, coming to you this time from Boston, Massachusetts. The way the United States and the UK are both conducting themselves is dragging both of us down together and many others in the circle with us who seem to be willingly piling on as we find out how far down we can go. And this whole Russia-Ukraine war is the crucible for this. Unfortunately, I don't think a lot of the people are aware of just how bad they're sounding and just how much damage they're doing to the relationship, the reputational relationship on the ground. And that's where we like to live. And the Daniel Davis Deep Dive is what's real on the ground. So let's jump right into it. First of all, let's go actually to Russia. President Trump said he has the biggest sanctions that he has done, certainly in his second tenure here. And it's going to cause a really big impact, so we claim, on the Russian. There's been two big, their energy firms have been hit. The Shadow fleet has been hit, and promise of more aid and other kinds of military lethal aid to the Ukraine side. And this is supposed to finally bring Russia to its heel. When you take a look at what the Russian president has had to say, not sure that he's buying it.
Regarding the new sanctions, first of all, there is nothing new here. Yes, of course, they are serious for us, that is clear, and they will have certain consequences, but they will not significantly affect our economic well-being. Well, it is known that during his first presidential term, President Trump introduced the largest number of sanctions that had ever been imposed against the Russian Federation up to that time. Today they have, of course, two aspects, both purely political and economic. As for the political aspect, what is it about? It is, of course, an attempt to put pressure on Russia. But no self-respecting country and no self-respecting people ever make any decisions under pressure.
Like I've said many times, yes, you can understand that there's going to be pressure put on Russia. And yes, you can expect that whatever they say in response to any stimulus from the West, you have to take it with a grain of salt, if not, you know, strong level of uncertainty. Like, yeah, I'll believe that when I see it. That's healthy. I do that on every time. I always listen. But as I also tell you, it is important to listen to what people say, because you have to look at what is said, and then you have to look at what is true on the ground, and then obviously you follow out to find out what happens next. And you build up a track record, a good one or a bad one, depending on how things go in a consistent period over time. And what we have seen from the Russian side is that they do, on occasion, make some statements that turn out to be completely false. You may recall in the weeks and months leading up to the initial invasion in 2022, to this big buildup that had been going on for about the last 10 or 12 months before that time, that Russia kept saying over and over, we're not a threat to anybody. We're not going to invade anybody. And of course, they were building up, and that's exactly what they had planned to do. And that's exactly what they did. So there's that in that category. But by and large, especially when it comes to resolving this war, Russia has been pretty consistent. They've been incredibly consistent in saying what they will tolerate, what they won't. And I'm not talking about since 2022. I'm talking about since 2007, back at the Munich Security Conference and going forward. They have been resolute that NATO and Ukraine and Georgia is a no-go. It's a red line for which they would use military technical means, is the phrase that they used. And they made good on that. And ever since, even before the war started in 2021, they said, these are the terms that we will not go to war on. And then once it did start, these are the terms we'll stop. And then they continued repeating variations of that all the way through to the current day. So they've been very consistent in what they've said right there. And it also passes the sniff test, because it's logical and rational for them to want to do that. They have the military wherewithal to get it done. So when now then you see what is Putin saying after Trump puts these big sanctions on. Now, we certainly know that Trump's intent is to pressure Russia into, as the Europeans have said, as Zelensky keeps repeating ad nauseum, force them to the table to a just and lasting peace, which, of course, is defined by the West as capitulation. If Russia will just give up, and in fact, as Trump himself said a week or so ago, just quit fighting, just stop where you're at, everybody keep what you got, go home. You see what Vladimir Putin has said.
Regarding the new sanctions, First of all, there is nothing new here. Yes, of course, they are serious for us, that is clear, and they will have certain consequences. But they will not significantly affect our economic well-being. Well, it is known that during his first presidential term, President Trump introduced the largest number of sanctions that had ever been imposed against the Russian Federation up to that time. Today they have, of course, two aspects, both purely political and economic. As for the political aspect, what is it about? It is, of course, an attempt to put pressure on Russia. But no self-respecting country and no self-respecting people ever make any decisions under pressure.
So anytime you hear a statement from somebody, you have to say, okay, what is their track record? What do they often say? And then how do things work out? You also have to say, how does what they say in the moment stand up to the sniff test? And then you have to have a healthy amount of skepticism, especially if it's an adversary, somebody who wants you to believe a certain thing that would benefit them. You have to give a lot of skepticism to that. But what you got to also be careful to do is not just close your mind to it because somebody you don't like said it. If it happens to line up with something, if there happens to be a good track record, and that's what we have to understand here about President Putin, because there is certainly incentive to say, oh, these sanctions you just put on, those are nothing. They're not going to have any impact on us. We're going to weather those. That's just bravado that you would expect. You would never expect ever for any adversary to say, man, those sanctions they put on us, it suck, man. It's going to kill us. I don't know if we're going to survive this. Obviously, they would never say that. So you expect, I mean, look at Volodymyr Zelensky. He just reflexively says the sky is blue, even under a thunderstorm or while he's under the ocean. More on him on another time. But this issue right here, President Putin has been saying nearly the same thing since 2007, that Ukraine inside of NATO is a red line for which they would use military force. They've said it all the way through. They've obviously demonstrated for the past closing in on 4 years now. So we can take him pretty much at his word on that. When he says, we're going to fight for this, we'll die for this, you can believe that he's going to do it, especially and maybe even primarily when you see him put actions and deeds behind his words. When you see him manifest things on the ground like an industrial base, like a pipeline for troops, like air power, drone power, ammunition quantities, missile batteries, new categories of long-range drones, et cetera, new electronic war. When you see them doing all these things that enable them to make good on these threats, you got to pay a little bit more attention. That's crucial. And what you heard Putin say there is that these, he admitted, they're going to hurt. I'm not going to say they're nothing. They are something. They're going to cause some pain. But he also says, we'll weather it. We've got some history here. And he didn't just go back to what Trump has done in the first part of this administration. He didn't even just go back to what the Biden administration had done. He went all the way back to the first Trump term. And hardly anybody thinks about that now because it's practically ancient history, most Westerners. But Trump put a huge number of sanctions on Russia during his time. And you hear him brag about how he gave lethal offensive weapons to Ukraine, whereas he always talks about Obama just gave him blankets and stuff. And he says, no, I gave him stingers and javelins and all kinds of other lethal military operations. The Russians are aware of that, too. So they see all the stuff that Trump has done. They see everything that Biden had did. And then now they see what Trump is doing in the present time. And they conclude it's going to hurt. But they also said that we'll weather it. And then he says the other thing is self-evidently is true. And it's accurate that you can hear this from Zelensky on a daily basis, from the European leaders on a daily basis, and now Trump here of late, that this is designed to compel and coerce Russia to have a just and lasting peace, something that the West wants. And they think that economic pressure, maybe that'll work where the military pressure can't or hasn't so far, even though this is the 19th, or actually there have been 19 European packages before this. And now this one's overlaid on top of that one. And when all the 19 packages haven't brought Russia to their heel, when all the ones during the Trump administration before that didn't bring Russia to their heel, upon what rational basis would you suggest this one's going to work? So who do you want to trust in terms of what their words mean, and where do you want to put your money on what the outcome is going to be? The actual track record you have for a long time, or this unsubstantiated and utterly failed hope that this time, what has failed 19 straight times before, and really you can add 20 to the Trump term before that. So let's just stick with that number. In fact, let's add Trump on top of it. Let's say 22 rounds, 19 European, and now two Trumps. All of this stuff together. Everything up to this point has failed to coerce Russia to do what you want them to do. What do you think is going to happen this time? Where's your money going to be? I think you know. You know where my money's going to be. Well, that's not the end of Putin, because he also said, by the way, it's not just about what these sanctions are going to do to us. You might want to consider what they might do in reverse, the famous blowback.
The world economy is growing and energy consumption is increasing. So it is not possible to sharply increase production at once in the moment. And if the amount of our oil and petroleum products on the world market sharply decreases, prices will rise. And my American colleague and I also talked about this. What will this lead to? It will lead to a sharp increase in the cost of oil and petroleum products, including at gas stations. And the United States is no exception. And if we take into account the domestic political calendar in the same United States, it is clear how sensitive certain processes will be in this regard.
So sanctions are a two-edged sword. You wield it one way, it has impacts on the other side. We've already seen this since 2022. So many of the sanctions that we had, these bone-crushing sanctions, they're going to destroy the Russian economy. Whose economy did they harm more? Not Russia's. Russia transitioned into a wartime economy, and they actually saw sustained growth up to about 4% in the last year, 2024. It's cooled considerably now because they've tried to get inflation under control and some other things. So now it's, I think, barely in the positive direction. It is still in the positive direction, but it's anemic from where it was. But they're weathering that storm. On the other side of that line, though, in the European side, they have not had any years at 4%. In fact, they're just stumbling along barely at plus territory. In some European states, they're below that. And one of the big reasons, energy inputs. Because instead of getting cheap Russian natural oil and gas, now that they've cut 80% of that off and they've gotten it from, well, the United States, we're really kind to give them much more expensive LNG and other petroleum products at an inflated rate, and sure, we'll send that right along to them. So all the inputs to their economic activity is now going to cost more. Higher cost equals higher output too. And so that means your price is going to come down, or your revenue is going to come down, your profits are going to come down, and you have stunted or even negative economic growth. Not hard to figure out. That's just common sense. And so what Putin's trying to tell him here is, those dynamics still exist. And number one, he just said practically, you can't just suddenly cut off a huge portion of global oil transit because it's a global commodity. You can't just suddenly shut it off. And because you put these sanctions in, that tomorrow everyone's going to comply with it, and suddenly there's going to be this big drop off in a huge amount of oil. And where's it going to come from? Because these things have to have long lead times. And in fact, some of these sanctions do. When you look at some of the fine print, some of these things don't even go into effect until 2027, some in 2026, depending on the categories. So a lot of this stuff is going to take time to unwind. So it's not going to happen overnight. And to find other alternatives, you have to have investment. So there's a lot of investment has to come. I mean, I'm talking even as simple as port facilities and transit facilities. Other ships have to be procured from other locations. This is a big, big moving piece here. This is not something you do on the fly. A stroke of a pen doesn't make this happen. And then there's the other issue. There's the oil price. And then he says, let's just say somehow you figured it out and you still got it cut off there. That's global commodity means that the price here is the price relatively within a range somewhere else. So if about the time you want to get this thing unwound, you're going to be getting close to the the midterms, which the president and his party want to win. And if all of a sudden the gas inputs are way more expensive here because all this Russian oil is off the market and they can't find buyers because you've sanctioned everybody and you've succeeded in getting anyone from buying it. So now, great, Russia's losing their income. Yay, that's happy for the people who want this to happen. But what about the rest of us? And I'm talking about all the rest of us on the planet, because now there's a dearth of oil that's not on the market that should be. So it's got to be made up somewhere else. So that means that suddenly the supply is out of whack with demand. Demand will be much higher. And what happens when demand is higher than supply? The price goes up. And you want that to happen at the pump right about the time you're going to the midterm, and you can count on your political opponents to tell everybody that the reason they're paying more at the price of the pump right now, and ergo for everything else in their life, is because of your policies. Is that a place? Is that a roll of the dice you want to make? Putin seems to be taunting him and going, I can weather it. We have a system of governments that we can tighten our belts if we have to. And historically, he's probably right that Russians can suffer a lot throughout the centuries. They have shown an incredible capacity to suffer. Don't think you've seen that much in the United States or the West world at large since World War II, especially. We've kind of grown fat and happy and like, no, we want what we want today. We demand what we get right now. And I'm not sure that's a gamble you want to make, but it's one we have. And in fact, I don't even have to be a soothsayer here to try to figure that out, because it turns out that President Trump himself answered that question in a conference on, I believe it was the 23rd.
President Putin basically said today that Russia is immune from U.S. sanctions. He said that it would not impact the Russian economy in any serious way. Is he
good.
Wrong?
I'm glad he feels that way. That's good. I'll let you know about it in 6 months from now. Okay, let's see. Let's see how it all works out.
Okay, so let me just ask you a question here. Just between you and me. If you have to listen to Vladimir Putin or Donald Trump on what's going to happen 6 months from now in the international arena, given what you've known so far, whose hand do you want to put your future into in terms of who's going to be right on international affairs? Is it going to be the guy who's been in charge for 20-something years in Moscow, or is it going to be Donald Trump and his track record of vacillating and changing back and forth and being dramatically wrong on so many key issues and then not batting an eye, not even acknowledging it happened the next day? So he mocked him and is that joking, yeah, let's see where it is 6 months from now. That's a good idea. So this is October 24th, October, November, December, January, February, March, April. Okay, let's just put a little pin on our calendar here and come back on April 24th, 2026. And let's see. And I'm not just saying that. I'm actually going to do this. This video you're watching right now, we're going to play this on the 24th of April, and we'll see, good or bad. Who knows? Maybe I'll be shocked and surprised, and it turns out that Trump will have been right, and then we'll give him big congratulations. I rather doubt it. We'll see. Put your pen on that one, too. One other thing that's not going to help Trump get to the 24th of April, and that is the fact that as he's talking all this big smack and all this pressure he's going to put on Russia, then he actually takes the pressure piece off the board, at least rhetorically, and that is the Tomahawk missiles. Now, there's been a lot of talk about whether he's going to put the Tomahawks in there. You may recall he boisterously said from Air Force One a week or so ago that, yeah, I might do that. If Putin doesn't do what I want, if he doesn't come to the table the way I want, yeah, I may give them to Ukraine. And then, of course, he turned around and said, once Zelensky got there, he said, yeah, we probably need those for ourselves. Well, he went a little bit further in this press conference here.
Well, the problem with the Tomahawk that a lot of people don't know, it'll take a minimum of 6 months, usually a year, to learn how to use them. They're highly complex. So the only way a Tomahawk is going to be shot is if we shot it, and we're not going to do that. And we know how to use it, and we're not going to be teaching other people. It's too far out into the future.
So he's just flat out saying there won't be any Tomahawks, there won't be any new long-range weapons. So the things that have an impact on the battlefield, he's just saying, yeah, that's not on there. That's not in the cards. We're not going to do that. The truth is that he was never going to do that. And as I was saying, even when people were talking about it and claiming that we should do it, I said it won't make any difference, because you don't understand how wars are fought. And you can look and see the thousands, tens of thousands of long-range drones and high-velocity missiles that the Russians have been firing, the glide bombs, I mean, thousands of them. And even though that causes a lot of damage to the Ukraine side, which is a much smaller country and a much smaller target set, and you can't spread things out that much, it is damaging, but it has not been crippling. It has not been debilitating. They can still survive the war. So the idea that even a handful of Tomahawks was ever going to change the tactical dynamic anywhere was always absurd. But now Trump's even rhetorically taken that off the table as well. And so you have him saying, we're going to try something that has failed for 22 straight rounds. We're going to try it again, see if maybe it works this time. But we're not going to do anything different on the ground. Then where is your confidence that you're going to mock Russia and say, yeah, we'll see where we are 6 months from now? So not sure how that's going to work out, but that's what we're going to be looking at here. So that didn't help his cause. Well, as I said at the outset here, this is an issue where you used to have the British Empire. The sun never sets on the British Empire, 17th, 18th centuries. They ruled the global commons. And now it's not so much. But if you listen to some British folks, you still think some of them may think that's a current situation here. That's one thing if it's just kind of an eye-rolling situation where this is kind of ridiculous, but this is who you got here. But it's another thing if you believe what you're saying, because I promise you the other side is more than well aware of the power dynamics that exist in the globe today. But it doesn't seem like people in London are. This is from on the 20th of October, so a few days earlier, where you had the British Defense Secretary, John Healey, talk about how tough the UK is and how scared Russia is of them.
A sight that I will never forget. That small group of Ukrainian service personnel joining our VE Day 80 parade. And as they marched with enormous pride down the Mall, they did so to deafening cheers and applause from both sides and from the platform that greeted them in front of Buckingham Palace. And that's why President Zelensky calls the UK his closest ally. It's also why Putin ranks Britain as his number one enemy. And as his aggression grows, both in Ukraine and beyond, Britain and our NATO allies will stand more unified and stronger. And we will act. Within days of Russia's drone incursions into Poland, British Typhoon jets began flying air defense missions over to Poland and that eastern flank. Within weeks, we will now start to produce jointly with Ukraine in the UK, Ukrainian Octopus interceptor drones. Within months, we will establish the new UK Drone Centre. And within this Parliament, we will double investment into drones and other autonomous systems to more than £4 billion.
Wow. Listen, you want to say that Russia, the biggest continental power in the world and the largest nuclear stockpile in the world, ranks Britain as their number one threat. That's what you believe? So you think that you're scared of Russia. Let's see. So you have some small number of nuclear weapons. If you're lucky and you work really hard, you might be able to scrape together one combat division. Maybe. And they have no combat experience at all, so it's all theoretical. So they would be starting where Russia did in February of 2022. And that goes for all of us, by the way, our army included. We would all be starting from that point, whereas the Russians aren't. Should, God forbid, we end up fighting them in a conventional or nuclear war, let's don't even go down that path here. But you think that you're scaring Russia? See, that's what worries me. He may actually believe that. He may think that, yes, that we're scaring them. And then he says we're going to put action to it. And what is the first action he says? That when there was alleged a handful of Russian non-armed drones that strayed into Polish territory or were diverted there from electronic warfare, we still don't know. Could have been either one. It's possible. Both are plausible. But they did fly in there. At least even that, I say, is alleged. We saw some wreckage on the ground, and we were told that's what happened. But his comment here is there that immediately British fighter jets took to the skies. Well, that's scary. Against unarmed drones? Yeah, and did you shoot any down? Because one claim has that somebody, whether Britain or someone else, fired at one of these drones, missed and hit a building, hit a house. And that's what blew up one of the roofs that we saw, as opposed to an unarmed drone, which, according to Poland, is the only thing that entered. There was no armed drones that entered the country. So they've never explained how they claim a drone actually blew up on the house, et cetera. But be that as it may, that's your evidence. And then you want to say that we're going to increasing drone capabilities. We're going to open a joint training or a joint development center, et cetera, i.e. those are way off into the future. I think it's getting increasingly tenuous and difficult for Ukraine to even hang on another year, much less put some S at the end of that and just roll it off into the future, which is what it would take for here. And then the numbers are minuscule in comparison to how many the actual need are here. And that's what you want to brag about to people. Now, that works at home. And if your only concern is we want to get more money for the defense industrial base, I guess that'll fly. It probably will, in fact, because most of the people, as we've heard from our good friend Ian Puttick and other folks who live in the UK, they confirm to us that this is almost all they hear on their media. So they believe it. And so when they see all this money being diverted away, they apparently many of them believe that it is for a good cause and that they are that great. And it kind of feeds into your ego. It doesn't wash outside of the borders of the UK. It doesn't wash outside of the borders of the Western world. Maybe they self-congratulate each other on the inside, but it doesn't work outside, folks. Nobody's fooled by that. So when you're looking at now this combination of the 19th package of European sanctions, Trump's second package that he did from his first term and now here, total of 22, adding Biden in and all that, it's just an embarrassment because it's all failed because of all of these things. And even in the years before that, going back to 2014, especially where another whole batch first came on Russia, we have taught them how to get by our sanctions. And now then one of the other things we're talking about here, and not just the banking sector, but also the shadow fleet. You keep going after the banking sector, you're going to accelerate their drive to get into BRICS and to get out from under any dollar denomination whatsoever, weakening the dollar, weakening our future ability to manipulate markets for things of our benefit. It's literally like cutting our own wrist. And if you keep going down that path too, then you're going to, now that more people are going to, from other parts of the world, are going to want to abandon the dollar and go to something they see as more stable. So we keep going down a path here that has never succeeded. So many rounds of this stuff. And we keep wanting to try it again. What does that tell you about our intellectual capacity? What does it tell you about wisdom? Keep doing the same thing that doesn't have the outcome that you're claiming it does, but it does enrich your friends. It does make the military industrial complex just continue to just flush with cash at the top. It doesn't provide for the actual amount of ammunition and weapons you would need to fight a conventional war. It only does the super high dollar, higher upper end issues, especially the missiles, air defense missiles, air offense missiles, air-to-air missiles, those kinds of categories of things, super expensive, really lucrative to the production, marginally helpful on an actual ground war. So we're not going after those things. So we're defeating ourselves. We're setting ourselves up by having these things that are years in advance on the categories that are good to have but not essential, at the expense of the things that are essential. Now, I'm not advocating that we start stocking up on stuff so that we can fight a war in the future. We can choose one. That's a bad deal because then it could all too easily go nuclear. Much better to go into diplomacy and find win-win ways to survive and to live with each other so that nobody has to fight anyone and we can all live in peace. That would be ideal. We seem to be incapable of doing that. So what we're trying to do is the worst of all worlds. No diplomacy, but also not allowing us to set up to where we could actually sustain, fight, and win a war of attrition, which the Russians have done. And you can be sure that the Chinese have been paying a great deal of attention and have made substantial changes to their systems. And we already know that their industrial capacity is off the charts for the entire West writ large, probably more than the West and Russia combined. I think that there's some argument there. Who's behind the eight ball is the UK and the United States. We keep talking about how we're the leaders of everything, and folks, the only thing we may be doing is leading to the bottom and setting the stage for our own defeat. That's the harsh truth. That's my big concern here. Evidence is lining that way up. We need to do everything we can to get this ship turned around quickly before we run it aground and we're not able to recover it. That's your show for today, folks. Appreciate it. Hope you have a good Saturday. We look forward to seeing you back. I'll be back in my regular digs. Unless something breaks in between now and then, I'll be back on Monday. I look forward to seeing you then. Thanks a lot.